Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 566. And I'm joined today by Susie Ruffle. And for me, it seems insane. And we discussed this. And we discussed this in detail. It seems insane that we've got to episode 566 before having Susie on. I'm a big fan of Susie's comedy. I'm a big fan of their podcasts. And I'm a big fan of their just presence in this world. Again, as I expressed in the episode, so this one's been a long time coming. It's about flipping time. As you hear this, Susie has, I think, one more date announced of their Big Kick Energy live podcasts. Is it the Bristol one? I think it is. But there's more to be announced as well. I've heard rumours. So they may be announced by the time this comes out, but follow on the socials and all that business to get on top of that. And as we discussed, they will be going on tour next year, I believe. But there'll be loads of work in progress stuff to go and sink your teeth into. Yeah, it's wonderful. But while we're here, I should mention that friend of the podcast and label, B Dolan, dropped a new music video on Friday, Fantasy Baseball. It's not about baseball. It's about the obsession with ranking rappers, top five all time, dead or alive, and finding the different ways to rank and put art against art, you know, poetry slams rather than poetry readings, comedy competitions rather than comedy lineups, things like that. It's really good. And you can pre-order B. Dolan's album, The Wound Is Not the Body, which is about to come out. It's literally about to come out. In the UK, it will be available in like your HMVs and your Amazons and all that, but also at speechdevelopmentrecords.com, which is one of the things that we're brought to you by today. So head over there to support the podcast and support independent rap. Good combination of things to support, all in all. You can also support by going over to patreon.com/ScroobiusPipio, where there's now a variety of tiers at which you can support. And I've been more active on there recently. So again, I'm not promising it's going to last, but if you want to throw some money in the kitty, then that'd be awesome. And you can head to twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipYo for all the fun and hijinks. I had arguably my biggest stream of all time on Friday. I did a song battle contest for best kids TV theme tunes. So everyone who tuned in live had a chance to submit a choice. And we had 64 going head to head in a tournament. And then the people in chat vote by selecting song one or song two for each round, and we have a round of 64, then a round of 32, then 16, then 8, then the quarterfinals, then the semifinals, then the finals, and we decided the best kids TV theme song ever. Now, you can go and watch that on demand. It's a long one, I'll warn you, but it's a joy. So feel free to go and watch that, or just come and hang out at future stuff over at Twitch. Again, people sometimes avoid Twitch because they're like, I don't know how it works. If you can figure out how to listen to a podcast or how to use Netflix or Instagram, then I promise you Twitch isn't complicated. Or people are like, oh, it's all computer games. Nah, it's arguing over kids' theme tunes as well instead sometimes. So yeah, they're the ways that you can come and hang out and support. Let's get into the podcast because, as said, me and Susie have never crossed paths. We've never had a word of conversation. So I was excited to do so. And when we jumped on the Zoom, I quickly declared myself a huge fan. And Susie very kindly declared themselves a fan of the podcast. So that's a good start to any conversation. Do you know what I mean? You meet for the first time and you both say, I already like you. Now we can relax. You don't have to be sitting there thinking, do they hate me? Do they hate me? Do they hate me? Do they hate me? I already like you. So let's talk. It's a beautiful thing. So I hope you already like this. No, I hope you like this. Episode 566 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the wondrous Susie Ruffle. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. And then I record this as a backup, but we are rolling. I'm here today with Susie Ruffle. How are you?
I'm very good. What I'm delighted about is that I can see what Bridget Christie was talking about in her episode of your podcast.
Right.
by the art behind you.
Yes, the weird art. So there's
yeah, which I like.
A stormtrooper on a crucifix.
Yes,
which is by Riker, and a painting by Heath Kane. That yeah, it's the perfect podcasting background spot, right?
I like it.
What's in your background?
Well, that is one of my own tour posters, which I can't decide if that's cringe or not.
No, I love it.
But from a show that I really enjoyed doing. And then that is a Magda Archer.
Beautiful.
Picture which said, we likes it.
I love it.
And it's it's of course a small bear riding a swan.
Yeah, of course, as one would expect.
You know, which I guess most people have in their office.
I've told this story a million times, but
not to me, so go for it.
Touring people in general, musicians, comedians, whatever,
sure.
you get to do tour posters and that's exciting and you want to keep
yes.
some and frame some. But one of my favourite moments was being in the studio of rapper B Dolan with another rapper, Sage Francis. And we put them in our office or in our studios or whatever else. And he's loading up a beat and there was just a silence as it's all loading. And Sage looks around and just goes, so who's the B Dolan fan? Which just killed me, because you can't just throw these things away, but then equally you don't want it in your living room just kind of
his
pictures and posters of me. But so I too have a room that's got so many posters and bits of art that people have given me and stuff like that. I'm like, I can't throw it away, but I can't have it on display in the general areas of my house, because
no, I don't want I don't want a plumber to see it to
no,
be like,
exactly.
Oh, she's like an egomaniac.
Yeah, yeah. There's just some pictures of me over there.
There's just me slowly aging through the years.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. When I started this podcast, I decided I'd take a Polaroid for each episode, and that's got depressing. I didn't realize I was just going to literally weekly track my aging.
You could put them all together and they would end up like one of those, you know, those TikTok videos where people are like glitching all over the shop and it's like, look at me aging over a year or something.
Yeah, it'd be exactly I like that. But just to start things off, how are you today? How are you? How's your weekend? How's your life? How are you?
My weekend was good. Very good, in fact. I had a show on Friday night, then family stuff all weekend, which was really nice. And then this morning, got up and dropped our daughter at nursery and then decided to like run to the beach and have a walk across the beach for just 25 minutes, grab a coffee just to start the week.
Amazing.
Looking at the sea.
I love that. And I love it particularly because today is Earth Day. So I love the fact that you ran across to the beach rather than drove to the beach or anything like that. And then just had some nature. I think weird, like people talk about the positives and negatives of lockdown and that whole period and things it made us aware of ourselves, but I think getting out in nature was a massive thing that it really highlighted the importance of that for me. And generally water is a big thing, so to go either to a river or to the sea or to a lake, just being near water is such a powerful thing.
I love living by the sea.
Yeah.
I love it. It's like, I lived in London for about 17, 18 years.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Brighton and it was like, I didn't realise how much I missed this. This is amazing.
Yeah. Do you think Brighton should be some kind of rule about them calling it a beach though? Because I just don't think pebbles count as a beach and it really annoys me. I always forget until I get to Brighton. I'm like, yeah, you're going to the beach. Oh, hang on. It's mainly stones.
See, I grew up in Portsmouth, so pebble beaches make sense to me.
It's standard.
It's standard. You're lucky.
Yeah.
It's a treat to see sand.
It's an absolute treat. Before we started, I was kind of saying that I've been really excited to have this chat. I think it's the perfect day to start my week. I'm a big fan of your work and of you as a presence, but we'll get into all of that.
That's very kind of you to say. Well, as I said, I'm a massive fan of this podcast, so I was very delighted to be asked to do it.
It's bizarre our paths have never crossed, is what we were discussing, because we've got so many mutual friends. I'm a big comedy fan and obviously a big podcast fan, and you're key in both of those worlds, yet for some reason we've not crossed over. It's
Do you think
bizarre.
Someone's been trying to keep us apart?
I think it might be that.
Do you think the power would be too strong?
I've got a few mates who've got podcasts, and I've let them know I've become a fan, a Bilal Zafar and Joey Page's podcast, like, and there's a guy, John Harris and Joel Grove have podcasts. Everyone I'm mates with who've got a podcast, They never seem to let me be in direct contact with the other member of their podcast. So it always feels as if they're consciously trying to, if I want to hit them up to do any Pod Bible work or anything else, no, you come to Bilal and then he'll talk to Joey. And yeah, it's...
And you have to be...
So someone's been doing that to us, I think, just keeping us apart in some strange way.
I think you might be right.
I want to talk about the podcast and I want to talk about comedy. But
sure.
Before I do that, for some reason, mm-hmm. I don't know why I wrote this in my notes. I just want to get your opinions on something really small and easy to figure out.
Okay.
Is social media good or bad?
Oh, God.
Because I struggle with it so much.
I mean, I'm pleased we started with something quite easy.
Do you know? Do you have the answer?
I think it should be treated with caution.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good as long as you treat it with caution. I think,
yeah.
I think it's really hard not to become kind of obsessed with it, to end up not comparing yourself to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we were meant to know about the ins and outs of everyone's life as humans, you know, when we first started walking around on this earth. I think we were meant to know about 100 other people existed and that was it.
Yeah.
And I feel like the constant excessive information about everything sort of makes my brain ache some of the time.
It magnifies everything. It magnifies everything. I think there was a period that I thought, oh, it's made the world worse. But I think it's just shown us how bad the world is rather than made it worse. So I think, like, as you were saying there, like, people will say, oh, but you only see the good side of people's lives. But that was kind of always the case. If you bump into someone in the street, they're going to generally say, oh, yeah, Mary's doing good and John's done this. That you always only got the good side of people's lives. It's just now it's magnified to such a degree that it seems fake and damaging. So
yeah, and I think... I totally agree with that people have only ever showed the good bits and the world has always been awful in some respects. I think the good side of it is that it's become a great place for people to connect with other people like them.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly as sort of a queer person, I think had there been social media or like YouTube when I was growing up, I think it would have been really comforting to see adults that were like me, which I didn't really see at all.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, I think lots of people, and even if it, you know, it's the thing that you're into, you know, if you're into playing Dungeons and Dragons, it's like, oh, you'll find a whole community of people that get you.
Yeah.
Or if you want to play a football game online or whatever the thing is, I think that's really nice. I think that it has this, like, it can make you feel super isolated or it can make you feel super connected.
Yeah.
And
it
sort of depends on which side the coin drops that day.
It's absolutely. Again, it goes back to the magnifying of everything, because I think you're completely right there. I think we wouldn't be in such an amazing place for the development of sexuality, of gender, of types of relationships, of all these different things that seem to be evolving so at such an exciting pace that's often confusing for me. But
yeah, for sure.
but wonderful and exciting to see. And social media opens you up to seeing other people like you, but then at the same time, it opens you up to people who don't like people like you or like that. And those, it opens you up to abuse that you wouldn't have got previously, or attacks or accusations that you wouldn't have got previously in your small town or whatever else.
Yeah, it's why you've got to take everything online with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Like eat the good stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I believed people on the internet, half the day I'd walk around feeling like a dog with two dicks.
Yeah.
And the rest of the day I'd walk around feeling like I was the worst person that ever existed and I should probably stop doing all of the things that I do and live under a rock.
It's one of the rare things where experience in this particular industry really helps, because I think that's something you learn early on in any entertainment type thing. I mentioned B. Doden earlier, but he streams on Twitch as well. And he had a thing recently because a YouTuber who comments on who reacts to music videos found one of his songs and loved it. And B kind of talked about it, but his audience were kind of surprised he wasn't losing his shit at the praise. And then the next video that this guy reacted to, he didn't like. And B was like, this was why. This was why I didn't get excited about this guy claiming I'm the best thing in the world. Because then I would then have to accept when he thinks that he doesn't agree with my political views or whatever here. And, you know,
that's the thing. You've got to take, you know, getting like great reviews is nice. And like, you know, we've all got an ego. But I think that as much as you're willing to believe everything from a 5-star review, you've got to believe everything from the 3-star as well.
Yeah.
So you're better off just sort of taking both of them and going, okay, well,
Yeah.
These people like it. And these people are the people that come.
Yeah.
These people are the people that pay to come. And yeah. I'll just keep doing what I like to do.
Yeah. And the validation all starts to mean nothing in the end as well anyway. I recently had someone excitedly messaging me to say they'd decided I was a lyrical genius, which was obviously exciting and positive. And then the particular lyric that they chose, I was like, oh, I don't even like that one. I'm not that proud of that one. I was like, here's the ones I wanted you to tell me I'm a lyrical genius for,
yeah.
But now you're praising me for the wrong bit. So it's like, well, it's all pointless. Let's just forget about it. Yeah, it's an interesting place, isn't it? And I just, yeah, I go on and off constantly.
Have you found... with like live stuff, just talking about like the buzz. Like yeah. I remember I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I wonder if it's the same in music, but like when I was coming through and I was, well, when I was really new and you'd go and do like a 10-minute spot at the Birmingham Glee or like, you know, a proper comedy club, but you'd be the 10 spot. So you'd be on like, some clubs don't give you any money at all. Sometimes you get like half the fee because you're doing half a set. And there'll be times when I'd have really good ones, yeah. ones where I'd go, next time I'm going to get the 20, next time I'm going to like today, that's the gig that's made me step up a rung of the ladder.
Yeah.
And like that high of smashing a gig mm-hmm. to 300, 250, 300 people would stay with me for a week.
Yeah.
And equally a bad gig, the shame shudders that I would walk around with thinking of it would stay with me through a week. Now, I could have a fantastic gig in front of 1,000 people. And I would say the buzz lasts for about 6 minutes. Like, yeah. I'll come yeah. off stage and be like, that was amazing. I loved that. That was, but even less than that, probably by the time I've walked back to the dressing room and I'm catching up with the acts yeah. that haven't been on yet and we're chit-chatting.
Yeah.
Is that the same for you?
Yeah. It's the weirdness of making your passion your work, isn't it? Because
yeah.
it does become normal and everyday. I always remember the first time I did my first big headline tour and it was exciting, but my partner at the time would like ring me after every show or message me after every show, like, how was it? And after four or five shows, it was like, well, it was the same as the last one. Because the good thing is I've gone to a town, everyone who thinks I'm good has got together in a room and shouted about how good I am, and then I've left. So it's never going to really be bad because you know, you're not yeah. If it's your headline tour, everyone is there for you as such. So it's that different thing. And I remember feeling really, yeah, kind of ungrateful because I'm having to lie in a message, go, oh my God, it was the best thing in the world. It's like, yeah, it went well again.
Yeah.
And, but the Wi-Fi isn't good at the hotel. And that's the main thing I'm focused on at the moment,
yeah.
or the beds, or it's not very dark rooms and I'm having to
yeah.
really struggle to close the curtains and yeah, all this kind of thing. So it's like those small things become the priority. But a weird thing that I learned, so I stopped doing music and playing live in general and I've not missed it. And something I've realized over the years from that is that my excitement was always at showing people this new thing I've created. And again, I think it's one of the advantages of comedy is you bring new material through more often. So if I'd have a new album, that first chunk of gigs, I'd be so excited about. And by the end, I'd be like, oh, I've shown you all it now. I'm no longer that excited because it was the realization after I stopped that, and again, it was a nice realization that it wasn't particularly about just getting on stage and everyone cheering and thinking I'm great. It was about, oh, but look at this thing that I've made or written or created.
And it was show and tell.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. Because I've since been at friends' gigs where we've got tracks together. If I wanted that hit of dopamine, I could jump up and do a track with them. And it hasn't appealed at all because it's like, no, we know that. We've played that. I've shown you all that. We don't need to show it again. Like, you can listen to that at home. So how is it, how's that buzz of a good gig when it's new material?
Oh, like the best.
Yeah. It's longer, right?
Best.
And it lasts longer and it's more exciting because you weren't sure, I guess. So the first time you do new material, you're going to have that even bigger rush if it goes well.
I love it. I love doing new. So I've finished a tour in November.
Yeah.
And then the show sort of had to stay in my head until January because I was filming it in January. So I was still doing that stuff and keeping that stuff sort of as fresh as I could.
Yeah.
So it was sort of at the tip of my fingers for when I was recording it because I was only recording it once. So it's like, oh, get it right, Suze.
Need to nail it.
Yeah, I need to nail it. And then I've been doing some other writing work and had some other jobs on. And now Sunday this week is my first new material gig for the next tour, which will start not this June, next June, so June 25. Yeah. So I've got a good while to write it, but I'm really excited. I'm really excited to go. I've got some ideas that I've only said to my wife, who is usually like a really good sort of litmus test.
Yeah.
Where she'll laugh or she'll go, yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. And that will be her going, I think this is too specifically you, or you need to find a way for people to connect with this, which is really helpful because she's not at all comedy adjacent. She's so far from comedy. And she likes it, but she doesn't love it.
Yeah. That's what you want, though.
Right.
It's that balance because the rest of the feedback that you'll be getting privately will be from comedians who, again, comedians, you need a balance of that. You need to be making the comedians laugh, but you don't want to only be making the comedians laugh.
Oh, yeah. None of my stuff is ever, sort of highbrow. What I do is sort of mainstream. So it needs to be, they're the gigs that I do, the telly that I do, the places I play. And that's the comedy that I like as well. I like I like connecting with lots of people. But it's good to have a, don't get me wrong, I'm not sort of standing in my kitchen doing the bit, but I'm sort of going, is that a funny idea?
Yeah.
And so, I've got a gig with friends as well, actually, on Sunday.
I love the idea of after dinner every night, you just do a quick five just to iron things out.
The weird thing is I have a mic. And I walk onto music.
Yeah. Your wife's like, oh, can we start that new series on Netflix? Can we just get this out of the way?
Not before me. No. But yeah, absolutely. The excitement of doing that new material gig has been in the diary for ages. And now I've started peppering them through my diary where I go. Okay. Because when I'm still doing sort of proper gigs, I use my, older stuff because I think if people have paid, good money to see a lineup show.
Yeah.
I think it's impolite to go on with stuff that I don't know if it works.
Yeah.
And I know there are some comics that would be like, no, comedy's for me and that's how I...
Well, that's what I was going to ask, what your new material approach is, because I always remember, I had one evening, which was the best example, because I went to two new material shows, but headline new material shows as such, so it wasn't multi-line.
Brand new acts,
So it was... Simon Amstel was doing an earlier one and then Ramesh was doing a later one. And Simon was really kind of, I've got these loose ideas, let's talk for a bit, see how it goes. And I went to Ramesh and I was like, how's this new material? This feels like a stadium show. But again, that could be just how far along they are on the new material. But I always remember hearing Joe Wilkinson talk about Rush and Connaughty and her going on stage with literally nothing. And just figuring it out and going, all right, let's have a chat and see where we land. So where do you sit on that spectrum of it's all ironed out, you just need to bounce it off the audience versus it's really loose or you've got literally nothing?
No, I would never go up with literally nothing. Yeah. I don't have that kind of confidence. But I also will never type my shows out. Mm-hmm. The only time I've ever typed up my stand-up is when I've had to do it for telly and they've had to, and a lawyer has to see it before it goes out on a big TV show. But I write it all down with a pencil and spider diagrams.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a word, not that this is my material because people that don't know me that are listening will be like, God, that sounds dreadful. But if it was kitchen and then underneath it, I'd have draw whisk. And I knew I'd have an idea about a drawer and a whisk.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, right, okay, now...
It's one of your classic bits, Susie. The drawer whisk bit is what you're mainly known for.
And I really appreciate you saying that. People love it. And when I go and do gigs, it's like, draw whisk.
Yeah.
It's like Glastonbury. It's mad.
Yeah.
And I'll have a couple of lines that I think are really funny.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's just funny for me. And that's okay. And that's where the learning happens. But I go up with lots of ideas, but never sort of a written out bit. Mm. And a lot of my material is sort of very physical and you can't really practice that until you're on stage.
Yeah, of course.
So I do lots of stupid things. I saw Lee Evans when I was 14 and I think it made some sort of dent in my brain where I went, that's what comedy is. So I always use every part of my body that I can or my face.
Yeah.
And so you can't really write that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You can't write, do a physical thing here. It's just
isn't going to abide that if you're really just getting real into it. Here's the joke, but what do you think of this face?
Yeah, exactly. You can't do it. I've got a bit in the last show where I do a bit about my cat and then I do a bit about how she stretches.
Mm.
And the longer the tour was going, the longer that stretch was and the more ridiculous it became. But that you can't type that.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't go,
oh, weirdly, it's funnier if you change direction with your head when they think it's about to finish.
Yeah.
And then you do another thing just briefly. Like that is the only, you can only learn that by people laughing on stage.
I love the working out of that kind of stuff. I went to school in Southend, and I once, on the way to school, I saw Lee Evans working out in one of the playgrounds. He was on a run and doing like a crazy workout on kind of monkey bars and things like that. And that was a real kind of, at the time, it was like, oh man, that's Lee Evans. Years later, as I've moved into acting and read kind of theories on how important the physical side is and your body, keeping your body in a state that you can transform and deliver what's needed for a role and all these different things, I was like, well, yeah, I've just always watched his stuff and gone, oh, he's a silly man doing silly stuff, but that's exhausting. And, oh, and you know, sure, he's had to keep limber or flexible and all these different things for the amount, the levels he would go to.
Yeah.
Because otherwise he'd injure himself or pull a muscle every night or whatever. So it was really interesting to see that. If you think of particularly a comedian like Lee Evans, you think, yeah, you're sitting at home thinking about material, but he's going, I've got the material, and now I need to make sure I can deliver it even, which, again, that fascinates me.
Yeah, well, if I come off after sort of, you know, an hour and 20 on stage,
yeah,
and I don't feel utterly exhausted, I sort of don't feel like I've done it right.
Yeah.
No, that's not right for every stand-up. There's plenty of really great comics that just stand still and talk into a mic, but that's not my skill.
I got into fitness after I stopped touring, and it was exactly because of that, because I was like, oh, right, I'm now in my late 30s, so I was doing a 90-minute workout every night. Now, if I don't do that, everything's going to go to shit. So it was a horrible having to play catch-up, having never looked at fitness at all, but not realising that I was keeping in shape because of these gigs every night. And it
makes
has an impact, right?
Totally.
Well, I want to dig more into your kind of growing up in Portsmouth and starting out in comedy and things like that. But I'm also aware that because I'm just a comedy nerd, I'll often focus on that completely. And I want to talk about podcasting. And I want to start kind of on the subject we're talking on, the difference between doing podcasts live and doing a set, because it is more you're turning up and you don't know what's going to happen, like more so, right, with a live podcast. How do you find those? Because you've been doing them recently with Maisie, with your big
Kick Energy,
and you've got one more end of May, right, in Bristol, I think it is.
Yeah, we've got Bristol, and then we're adding a few more.
Great.
So the podcast is about football, about women's football specifically. Well, first of all, we only really planned to do it for the World Cup last year.
Yeah.
And the idea was that Maisie thought, I wasn't into football at all. Maisie thought over the space of a tournament, she could make me a football fan.
Yes.
And we thought, that's a funny idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know what telly's like.
Yeah.
There's no point pitching anything. No. Like the amount of time that it would take for someone to come back to you and for three heads department to leave and a commissioner to leave and then someone else to be in charge.
When you were talking about the beauty of niches on social media, I was instantly thinking of, that's why I love podcasts as well. Because you can just go, right, no, here's a thing that we want to do.
Precisely.
It'll find its audience. I don't need someone to affirm it beforehand.
100%. And that's the great thing about podcasting. And so we were like, oh, well, rather than pitching this as a thing or trying to take it to, you know, an audio channel, just going, well, Maisie thinks she can make me a football fan. Let's see if she can. Mm-hmm. Although I had watched the Euros and really enjoyed it, but I hadn't got into it properly after that. And Maisie was like, I think you'd be a proper football fan. And so over the course of the World Cup, we would watch the games and then I would sort of try and explain what happened and I would get more and more into it and I was getting more and more excited. And then it got such a great following that we were like, oh, we should do this for the WSL, which is the Women's Super League, and for all the different sort of domestic tournaments. And so now it's just a weekly show where we chat about what's happened in football that week, whether there's any big news stories, anything about women's sports in general. We'll do like a recap of the different games that have happened and where people are in the league. And then lots of people write in and we get loads of lovely stories from people that have played football or used to play football or got in touch because my auntie played during the ban in the 1960s and all that sort of stuff and the history of women's football and stuff that I didn't know about at all. I didn't realise there was a 50-year ban of football when they only got unbanned, is that the word, in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so Maisie and I were just having loads of fun, just a real laugh. And Maisie is probably the person that I corpse with the most. We giggle loads and I don't know why. We just absolutely fucking lose it.
Yeah.
And there's been times when we've been doing telly shows together and we've had directors in our ears going, girls, I know you're having fun, but actually, like, you really need to get this done because, like, it is, like,
it's so contagious.
Now.
It's the and best it's thing in the world. It's so contagious.
Because if you get told off, it's great. Yeah. I mean, it's just really, really fun. Just tears pouring down our faces. And then we thought, we have such a good time together and we're such good mates. Why don't we take it on the road?
Yeah.
Because then people, then what often happens when you've got a successful podcast, people go, what's the telly thing?
Yeah.
Pitch it as a thing.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, well, if it becomes a thing, that would be cool. But we take it on the road.
Thing.
We've got autonomy. This is what, this is the thing.
Yeah.
And so it's a show where we play games with the audience in the first half. So it's loads of crowd work. I'm in the crowd for pretty much the whole of the first half talking to people when Maisie's on stage and we're showing different things and we're rinsing each other as much as we possibly can. Yeah, the other day I played Maisie snoring to the audience that her husband had sent me without her knowing. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just really playful, silly stuff.
Yeah.
Oh man, we play a game called the nickname game where we get, because Maisie and I both have nicknames when we're doing the podcast, and a girl was in the audience and she said that her nickname was Mortgage. We asked why and she said, well, I've got a lazy eye, and so my friends say that one of my eyes is fixed and the other one is variable.
That's outrageous.
And the audience lost their minds. Then she ends up being like a part of the show. You know, we keep coming back to Mortgage. And, you know, she's the person that said that. It's not like we're roasting her.
She's shared it, and so she's
up for it. And so we just really make it feel like it's collaborative with the audience, which people seem to really love. And I think that's the thing with podcasts. It feels very personal.
Yeah, and that's what makes it unique, right? The fact that
precisely.
it's different to a comedy tour where you're doing the same material every night.
Yeah.
When I used to do Distraction Pieces live, I'd sometimes have a surprise guest for half of it, but in general, the guest would be the audience. And that was kind of the point of it. And rather than just passing a mic in the crowd, it was like, queue up at the side if you want to come on and you'll sit down and we'll talk for however long it takes. It could be one question, but then if we get into something really interesting, like in Dublin once, I had this young lad who's a YouTuber with Down syndrome and has lived a far more exciting life than me. He's like an adventurer, does all this mad stuff. And we were like 5 minutes in and I'm looking over at the queue like, some of you might want to sit down because this might be the podcast now. This dude's just amazing. So, but again, that's what makes them exciting and unique. And I think that's really good to have that where you've got a structure of the show, but you've got that freedom to just see where it goes.
And then in the second half of the show, we have a professional footballer or a retired footballer. And so we had Rachel Daly, you know, Lioness, you know, Euro winner, World Cup semi-finalist, Aston Villa player on Friday. And we didn't tell the crowd and they lost their mind because she's a huge name in football. And then we ask footballers questions.
And was that one in Birmingham, did you say?
Yeah.
So local as well. It's like,
like a Villa player. We had loads of Villa fans in, so people are losing their shit. But then we try and ask questions that they don't normally get asked. We're not going to be what you get asked on Five Live or on TalkSport.
Yeah.
You know, we want to know about like your journey into football. We want to know about, you know, and it's obviously really interesting talking to him because lots of the women growing up, it was never a career option.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be something you could do for a job.
Yeah.
You know, most of them are like I think it was Ellen White who won at the Euros, had like was like doing her accountancy qualifications at the same time as playing football because you didn't know whether you had a career after football.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you wouldn't like you'd make enough money.
No, it's madness, isn't it?
And so we try and ask questions that are interesting and different and playful and just offering something that we didn't quite think was there from two comics.
Yeah.
You know, the playfulness. And so far, all of the footballers that have come on the show have loved it and have said, oh, yeah, I'll do it again. Let me know when you want me to come on again. Because I think it's very different being interviewed by a sports journalist than being interviewed by two comics that are, you know, passionate and sort of giddy like schoolgirls because they're in the presence of a lioness.
Yeah. But also, again, you're always going to be coming from a place of excitement and love and fandom. Because I think just what you touched upon there is one of the most fascinating things that in comedy, in music, like I'm a big fan of mixed martial arts and it always blows my mind when I find out how little some of these professional athletes are earning, how many other jobs they're having to have. And stuff like that. And I always remember, again, when I first went and toured in America and met some of my rap heroes who I've got CDs of and see that they're playing to 200 or 300 people. And I'm like, all right, in my mind, you're the biggest thing in the world, but you're maybe not earning enough to make a living out of this at the moment.
That's insane, isn't
and
it?
Those things aren't talked about because if a journalist brings it up, it'll often feel like it's coming from a place of criticism. Like when they have those, a photo has come out of this person who was in Breaking Bad, works in Tesco's or something.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, it's because all of these industries are really unreliable. But because we put them on a pedestal from a societal point of view, you assume that comes with loads of money and loads of success. So yeah, it's weird. I love those conversations when you get to go, oh no, right. And particularly with women's football, for a long time, there wasn't nearly enough support governmentally and things like that. So it's like, you shouldn't be working, but you have to because the support
wasn't
there.
Now, you know, people, me and Maisie were on the train up to Birmingham and we were talking about clubs and we were talking about what we had coming up and different clubs that we were talking about. And we said Aston Villa and these guys in front of us all went, "Way!" And then we were like, oh, there must be a Villa game today. They're all going up. Mm. And they were like, "You going to the match?" And we were like, "Oh no!" And we were like, "And we were talking about the women's team anyway." And they were like, "Oh, don't care about the women's team." And you go, "Well, I didn't ask you to care.
Yeah.
I think women's football aren't waiting for you to be interested."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the same way that golf isn't waiting for me to be interested.
Yeah.
But loads of people love golf, and I won't deny the fact that golf has a massive audience.
Your reaction to "Are you going to the Villa game?" wasn't, "Oh, I don't care about Villa."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's that difference. It's the difference of mentality there.
And so it does have like loads more support. I was at the Arsenal game yesterday and there was 42,000 people there.
Yeah.
And you know, there'll be clubs in the Premiership that aren't getting that.
Yeah, yeah.
In the men's game, you know?
Yeah.
But so, it's still, it is growing, but I think it's going to be massive. I mean, it is massive in many respects
but
already,
but grassroots support and stuff, where there should be more support in grants and as said, government funding that there is for bringing through the next men's England you know, teams and legends. There still isn't as much there. But I do, it struck me that I adore that you approached this like a big evil company and just thought, right, we're just going to do the World Cup and, you know, just make the most of the World Cup. And then you couldn't do it because you're actually good people. We're like, no, this is actually amazing. We're going to keep doing this forever. The plan was just while it's popular.
Well, we just did it. Well, that's the thing. Maisie is the proper, you know, she knows everything she's got and she's into, you know, she's watched football growing up, absolutely loves it, is obsessed with Leeds.
Yeah.
You know, she's really a massive football fan. And she was right that there was a, that there was sort of a fan that inside me that I wasn't even aware of.
And now
it's sort of something. And 12 months ago, I knew nothing about football.
Yeah.
And now I could tell you like who's on the bench at Man City. You know, like it's mad how quickly it's become something that I love so much and that I identify so much with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's only going to get bigger, which is really exciting.
When I was doing my prep for this, I want to talk a little bit about like-minded friends, because that was the one that the first podcast of yours that I just I jumped on and loved. But I was looking into it and I realized that you represent the full podcast of Spectrum in the full spectrum of podcasting, the full podcast of Spectrum in that was quite a sentence.
I like that as well.
That as well, but the fact that you've done a football podcast and a wine podcast, it's like it's the two ends of what podcasting is. It's the two ends of the podcasting world.
I pod hard.
And you can be hard. You can be on both ends of them, and then in the middle you've got one that's just you chatting with your mate, and that's the crux of podcasting, I think, at this point anyway. The main podcasts are pals having a chat.
Yeah, I mean, we started Like-Minded Friends 9 years ago this year, so it's been around for a long time, and we started it. And it's me and Tom Allen, who's one of my best friends in the world. And we started it because we weren't that busy, which is mad now. I mean, especially for him, like, you know, he's on everything and he's absolutely fantastic. He's absolutely killing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're in a stage where every week it's like, oh no, I've got this. And oh, I've got this on. Oh, I've got to be there for a show. And oh, I'm filming this thing. So when can we squeeze in this half an hour? Whereas once upon a time we had oodles of time to do it every week.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's just, I mean, it's basically you can hear sort of 9 years of us documenting our lives from like breakups to losing people we love and grief and excitement and all the different career moments, life moments. And it is just two friends catching up and people seem to love it. Like people really enjoy it and we don't really know what it is and it's never really had a format and it's doesn't really have a point other than people saying, oh, Tom always says it's a vestige for the lonely.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite good.
Yeah.
Which we would put ourselves in that category as well, to
100%.
Be clear. But people that are just trying to find a bit of contact.
Mm. It's the beautiful thing about podcasts is they are in your ears. And again, in the early days, when you guys were starting off as well, there was certainly a period where there was no one really, or advertising in podcasts wasn't particularly a thing. You couldn't make a lot of money from podcasting in the early days. And I remember doing a lot of work with Acast to kind of get through to sponsors that numbers on radio shows aren't the same as numbers on podcasts, because radio shows are passive listening a lot of the time. Yeah. It's on in the background, you're doing other things, whereas podcasts are destination listens. You're putting it on when you have the time. And again, that varies as well. There will be points that it's just on in the background, but in general, you're putting it on to really focus on it and have it, you know, with you on your journey or whatever you're doing. And that's a different, it means that those numbers are different, but it also means that those connections are different. And there will be people who connect in a different way to you through your podcasts than they do through your comedy.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And, you know, when I go on the road, frequently venue staff will say to me, your audience hasn't come from our mailing list, or it hasn't come from, there's 50% of them are brand new to this theatre.
Yeah.
And lots of people will come who've never been to comedy before.
Yeah.
Because they found, and I'm sure it's the same for Tom, although he has been doing stand-up and touring for longer than I have. But it is amazing to find those connections. Because then I think also, it sort of makes my gigs better.
Yeah.
Because I think people really care about what I'm talking about, or they care about, they're already invested in me. And I think because I'm so bloody honest, and I do sort of talk about my feelings, and I do talk about being quite anxious, and I do talk about all these different things, that people sort of know what they're getting.
Yeah.
So there's an energy in the room and there's an excitement, and I feel enormously lucky for that audience.
Yeah.
Like I fucking love them. The podcast audience are always brilliant and they're always so up for it, and they always stick around afterwards to say hello, and they all, and you know, they make me feel like I'm really special, and they're just lovely. It just makes me, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful because it's a way to connect to people that, you know, I'm sure you've thought of before as well, of like, there's just no gatekeepers.
Yeah.
So if you're, I mean, as you say, you know, if you're into it, you can find it. Like we've said about social media, like you will find your crowd. And it doesn't matter if your crowd is thousands or tens of thousands or just hundreds.
Yeah.
Because that's still like a lot of people to be talking to and a lot of people to be giving a shit about what you're sharing, which is massive.
It's interesting because it's really worth noting that the difference in crowds is a really big thing and really noticeable. I remember talking to James Acaster a lot about the change from when people were coming who were, oh, we love James Acaster, to when people were coming and going, oh, that guy on the TV's in town tonight, let's go and see him. It's a completely different vibe and relationship and interaction. And
for sure.
That can really affect you. Again, that might sound like, yeah, but they're paying, a gig's a gig. It's like, no, but if that's your life every night for several months, then it's got to be the right relationship and the right interaction and the right engagement.
Sure.
You know, it makes a big old difference.
Oh, massive, massive. And I feel very lucky that the crowds that I get are always, they are, I mean, I think I had one tour show that I didn't enjoy out of the 80, 70 odd that I did last year.
Yeah.
I like, there was one that I was like, huh.
Name them. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to make you. I'm kidding.
But you know, and I don't know that everyone gets that.
Yeah.
And I think when you're coming through, you assume that what you want is the big telly job and the this and the that. But again, I think you can, if then what you do on stage isn't that thing that you've done on telly, it might be quite a different audience. It might not be what you're after.
Yeah.
And I love live. I really love stand-up. I was one of the few stand-up comedians that I know. And to be clear, most of my best friends are stand-up comedians, but I was one of the few comedians that I know that during lockdown, I really missed stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I really missed it. I remember Josh Whittakin texting me and going, I bet you're missing stand-up. And I was
I really am.
Because I just love it. I love the live.
Yeah.
As soon as my tour finished, I like said to my agent, right, when's the next one? What makes sense in my diary for me to get back out on the road? And I want at least a year to write the show, so I feel really proud of it.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing. And I think that sort of harks back to like a sort of working class family. But when people come and pay to see me, I'm like, oh, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
It's got to be my best. It's got to be the best that I can do, you know? And so I like to have as long as possible to write a show. And I like to really give people their money's worth and do more than an hour.
Yeah.
And give people, you know, a night out. I want it to be worth getting a babysitter.
Yeah. Or the giving is something I want to talk to you about, because you touched upon the honesty in your shows. And again, I think in your work in general, whether you're writing things or expressing opinions online or whatever else, or on podcasts, honesty and openness on things that mean a lot to you is really key to who you are. It's one of the reasons, as I said, I connect with your work on many different mediums. But that can also be taxing and mentally exhausting and hard. So I guess, how important is the honesty, and how do you balance that with just living, if you know what I mean, with life?
Yeah.
You know, pouring yourself into a new set can be amazing, but, you know, control over how much you put out there.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm really happy talking about stuff like mental health, or, you know, stuff that I've really struggled with. The thing that I don't really talk about is my family. My wife and our daughter, they didn't sign up to be on stage. And whilst I might tell a story about my family life, it will always be really about my reaction to a thing, or me not being able to deal with something, or me being an idiot. You know, that's what it's about. Yeah. It's always about me. And so actually talking about ADHD or talking about anxiety, like, I've actually found it really freeing, because I think that when I was sort of embarrassed or ashamed of that, or talking about being like, I'm severely dyslexic, and it always made me feel really stupid. And talking about that stuff, I find actually is, and first of all, I'm very aware that we comedians are going through a phase of really talking about our mental health. So I know I'm not like, I'm really not breaking the mold by doing this. I'm well aware.
Sure.
You know, I know that. But talking about it has made me feel kind of better about it all. You know, and there's some stuff that I keep back, and I won't talk about, you know, specifics about my daughter's life, and I won't talk about specifics of my wife's life. She's got a very normal job. You know, she just happened to fall in love with the show off. That's not her fault. You know, with someone that absolutely needs for strangers to clap at their voice occasionally. So that's how I keep the distance. That's how I keep some back for me. The family stuff's not for sort of public consumption, I guess, for want of a better word.
I think that's beautiful, though. I think that's the key. I think I've always found the key to being able to be like almost uncomfortably open is knowing where your boundaries and privacy and lines are. It's like, I'll be so open about this, but again, similarly, I've always had that with relationships and things like that. It's always like, well, that's no one's business.
Yeah.
I'll talk about all the things that have broken my heart and the different struggles I've had and things like that. But it's like, no, if something's actually happening now, I don't want any outside negative effects on that, you know?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, once you put it out there in the world now, like, you know, the internet remembers forever, you know? And there's definitely bits of material that I look back and go, oh, I didn't love that. I'm really pleased I didn't do that on telly.
I'm pleased
that bit never made it.
Yeah.
To, you know, the internet, because it just isn't that good. Even though I'm sure there's clips online of me being very new and not really knowing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's it. But with regards to, the anxiety stuff, the mental health stuff, I feel like comics are sort of, I think we're kind of meant to be brutally honest. And someone called me really early on in my career, someone from The Guardian called me a confessional comedian. And I thought, I like that. Yeah. I like that it's kind of confessional.
Yeah.
And there is a line, but I don't know that people would know that, because it feels like I'm giving you everything.
Yeah.
But this little bit's private, because that's not about me. That's not just me.
Yeah.
Everything that's just about me, I'm willing to share, I guess.
But that means you're doing it really well. Again, I have a similar thing that I'll new people will get to know me and be surprised at how private I am, because they've heard my work and thought, but you just pour, or heard the podcast, like, you pour everything out. It's like, oh no, I'm in control. I'm holding the jug.
I
know exactly how much is being poured out here, and that's why it's comfortable. If it was just flooding out, it'd be incredibly uncomfortable, but
Well, and there's been times when I've been working out how to talk about a subject on stage, talking about heartbreak or talking about grief, and when I've not quite got it right. And it's never been at a stage where people have been filming it or anything like that, but when I'm doing new stuff. And I think audiences don't, I think there is a line for an audience as well.
Yeah.
Where they go, oh, I don't think you're comfortable with sharing this, or I don't think that, I feel worried for you.
Yeah,
the
I've
last
had that
thing
before.
You need
I've been
is
at,
pity.
At comedy shows before and felt, I always remember, and again, it's one he's talked about a lot. I remember going to see Doug Stanhope, and it was just after his mum had died. And part of his thing is that it's always on the edge of, is this someone about to break? But it was a beautiful gig, but it was a really uncomfortable and strange one, because you are like, oh, right, this feels like you should maybe have cancelled the gig, kind of. Maybe you shouldn't be here.
Yeah, and you never want an audience to feel like that.
Yeah,
so I think that it's a two-way thing.
Yeah.
I need to be comfortable enough with what I'm talking about that they're comfortable too.
Yeah. I love that though. I love that. I love when Marilyn Robertson's most recent show or their last show at the Fringe, it was one of them. It was like talking about stuff that they now had enough distance from that they could talk about. And again, you see that with a lot of amazing comedians that they'll get quite big and you won't know a key part of their story and their life and their journey. And then when that show comes out, it's because it's at the right time. It's when you're comfortable to talk about it. How do you balance that in podcasting though? Because podcasting, it's really tempting to talk about, as you spoke up, particularly if you're sitting down with one of your best friends, it's really tempting to talk about the immediate thing that's happening when you maybe aren't actually ready to talk. Like if you were writing it into a set, you'd go,
yeah,
I'm not ready for that actually. But because it's a casual conversation, you might put things out
and
there that you maybe
probably
shouldn't.
Stuff in like-minded friends where now I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Now I wouldn't share that. Now I'm a bit more trained in editing as I go.
Yeah.
And I mean like mentally editing as I'm speaking.
Completely.
But yeah, I think that is harder. But then I think it is different because I think a podcast audience they listen to you in a different way. I think they kind of look out for you. I think if you said something that certainly an audience of like-minded friends who listen every week, I think there's not so, I wouldn't be so worried about slightly oversharing. But again, I think I've just got it sort of inbuilt now about my sort of home life. But Tom will go, do you want to share that? Or our producer will go, are you all right with that?
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, actually, do you know what? Thanks for flagging that. Maybe
good
not.
Point.
Let me do it in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also you're not searching for a laugh. And I think that's the thing sometimes with comedy, especially if you're talking about something very bleak.
Mm-hmm.
That's when, if you're like really scrambling for a laugh, you might go extra dark or extra bleak to get like a, oh God, laugh.
Yeah.
It's not really the kind of comedy that I do, but that's, you know, you see people doing that.
Yeah.
And I think because you're not playing for, because we've not got a laugh track on the podcast. And I mean, thank God, because I don't know that it's always that funny. Sometimes it's really sad. Sometimes it's really serious. Sometimes we talk, you know, extensively about whether eating your lunch on your own at school has impacted our lives to the point that we're at now.
Yeah.
But then I think the light and the shade of that people really seem to like, hopefully.
I want to kind of wrap up by just quickly asking, how was Bake Off? Because that's got to be a dream, right?
It was an absolute dream. I was so thrilled when they asked me.
Yeah.
I love the show.
Yeah.
So I was a genuine fan.
Yeah.
And I look like I've won a prize to be there the whole way through.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had.
Yeah.
The team were lovely. Paul and Prue were lovely. Alison Hammond, I just adore.
Yeah.
Noel Fielding was lovely as well. Yeah, totally. The people that I did it with, Gabby Logan, Oti Mabuse, and David O'Doherty. Mm-hmm. David I know, and Oti I'd met before. I hadn't met Gabby before. A joy. I mean, the whole experience was like gorgeous. I was I can't believe this is work.
Do you always open?
I mean, it's not work. You don't get paid because it's charity. But
Cornflower, like it's a party popper. Because that was a main for. And the other note I made was the colour of your meringue kisses was just beautiful. Just
chef's kiss for
wonderful,
Ryan's kiss.
Absolute chef's kiss. Well, we'll wrap things up there. It's been a bloody pleasure talking to you. There's going to be a new tour next year, but there'll be work in progress stuff throughout the year,
progress.
I'd imagine, right?
I'm announcing a book. I mean, I'm not meant to tell people, but I'm doing a book. That'll be out next year as well.
That's exciting.
You know, I'm sure you've got loads of listeners who've not got a bloody clue who I am. So there's videos online if you're
I doubt that. And if that's
and
the case,
if you
then
don't,
yeah.
If you don't, that's fine as well.
I was going to say, if that's the case, I recommend just putting your name into the podcast app that you're listening to this on now and filling your boots because,
There's bits and bobs. Yeah, there's bits and bobs. But I've been a fan of this podcast for years, so I was delighted to do it. So thanks so much.
Lovely to hear. I'm sorry it took so long because I said it's...
Well, listen,
when
I'm curious about it, really.
When I reached out, I messaged saying, the weird thing is that Susie hasn't been on. I genuinely had to check quickly because I was like, hang on, I've had a lot of guests. Have I just forgotten one here? But it's been a pleasure.
It would be more painful if you'd forgotten me.
Yeah, exactly.
I prefer being not booked than being forgotten about.
Anytime. I did a post this week asking what guest people would like to see me have on, and I forget every time I do one of them that it's just me spending all day going, oh, they've been on, oh, they've been on, oh, they've been on. Literally every response is someone, because I've been doing it for almost 10 years now, one a week. It's like, oh, they've all been on.
Oh my God, yeah, so, that is a lot. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot, but it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we made it happen. And yeah, I look forward to catching your new material.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Susie Ruffle. Follow in all the places. Listen to all the podcasts. Susie's a podcast icon, I'd go as far as to say. We didn't even talk about their kind of interview podcast that they did, which is fantastic. So the ones you need to listen to are Like-Minded Friends, with Tom Allen. There's Out with Susie Ruffle. Delete that pause, buddy piece. Or leave it in. I just drew a blank. Leave it in. Let the people know that I am fallible. Let the people know I am fallible. There's Out with Susie Ruffle. There's Wine Times. And there's Big Kick Energy. That's four podcasts that you might not already be listening to that might appeal. And the breadth of them is wondrous. So, yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. I'll be back next week with another glorious guest. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com